G'day guys, welcome back to this week's episode of Dylan Friends. Huge, huge week. So excited to get this guy on the show. I've been wanting to chat with him for a long time. He's been someone I've really admired in the business world and someone I've been really lucky to know for a long time now. It goes back to sort of, I met him when I first started playing footy, and I suppose when I started my footy journey, he was on his business journey, and to see what he's been able to do now is really, really incredible. It's Julian Moosey. He hates these titles, but he's the director of Only Hospitality Group and Inglewood Coffee Roasters. He's done some awesome things, and yeah, he basically started his first cafe when he was about 21 years of age, playing footy down at Box Hill, and has been able to grow his hospitality group to over 40 cafes all over Melbourne, and he's really been one to set the tone, for a lack of a better words, in the cafe industry in Melbourne. And he's doing such an incredible job. He's also, opening restaurants and bars now and little bakeries. But yeah, his business has been awesome, and I've definitely learned a lot from him over my time. So I thought it'd be awesome to get him in to have a bit of a chat about, how it all started, his setbacks, the do's and don'ts of starting a business, because I've really enjoyed, talking to successful people like this, because I feel like anyone starting a business, you can just learn so much from people that have been there and done that before. So, yeah, it was super important for me to get him in and have a chat. But, yeah, the lessons that he has, that he's been there, done that, are, invaluable. And all businesses can, relate to each other in some way. It's probably something I've learned in the last 2 years. I think most people already know that. But for me, I didn't realize how much businesses are really intertwined, and you can take a model from something and then move it into something else. Yeah, he's doing awesome things. I love his, his work ethic and the way he, so passionate about his business and his lifestyle. So it's been a big, big inspiration for me and what we're doing here at Dylan Friends and List Cloggers and Producey. And yeah, just love surrounding myself with like-minded people that are real just go-getters. And that is what Moosey is. So yeah, hopefully you enjoy this episode, and hopefully you take out of it as much as I have. It's one that, yeah, hopefully, if you're starting a business or thinking about, doing something like that, it's one that you can really take some valuable lessons out of. So let's go.
My name is Deborah, Dylan's mum. Welcome to the Dylan Friends podcast.
Many ways I've been waiting my whole life for this moment.
Tears.
Strength.
I'm like, I run. She's like, Everyone runs. I'm like, but does everyone go to the Olympics?
They're sitting there meditating, going, oh my God, I think I'm meditating. How good is this? I'm meditating. It's
like, we had a Wu-Tang call. I was like, yo, Dylan, thanks for getting us in.
Just love it.
It's knuckle puck time. Yeah.
It's like Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.
Julian Moosey, welcome to the podcast, my friend. Jeez, I've been excited to get you in and chat shop.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, mate. Thank you for having me. I was actually a bit chuffed when you gave me a ring and asked, so it was good.
No, you're a, I'm not going to give you those titles that you hate, but, founder, entrepreneur, CEO, cringe. Big dog. It's been incredible to see you do what you've done. We were chatting off air just before about how we met. Now, you thought that we used to play like VFL together before realizing that you're like 10 years older than me.
Five.
You're a fossil. You're a bit of a fossil these days, 5 years older. But no, the first time we met was actually at your first cafe in Nicholson Street.
Okay.
I actually can't, you have those like funny memories where you like go back and think about things that like happened. They're very like distinct. I remember I was sitting there with my manager and in your little cafe, who's the annoying that? Brother.
Who's the manager?
Nick Geeshan.
Oh, yes, it's all come back to me.
Yeah, and we're sitting in that cafe, we're sitting there, and I think he was just giving me some terrible news, like, yeah, I think they're going to put you on the rookie list next year, mate, or something like that. And I remember it was this tiny cafe, and you're just sitting there, and like, I don't know if you could hear the conversation, but I'm like borderline crying, but I'm like, fuck, this is good latte. But I'm borderline crying at the same time.
Yeah, right. I thought we met in 2000. Yeah, I was at the Bull Ants in 2007. So obviously we got a lot of mutual friends. So I was I've forgotten it's all sort of blended into one of, all over the years, but that does definitely, it brings back memories. Yeah. Definitely, it was annoying, brother. And when I remember Eddie Kerno used to also come in and back in the day as well, but yeah, a bit's happened since then, Dill, hasn't it?
It definitely has. A lot has happened since then. And yeah, Ed Kerno was the first one to really show me your venues, because obviously you had that football connection with him. But yeah, to see what you've done now, mate, it's been unbelievable. And I was sort of thinking about this before, like where we met, and then, 2 years later, we met again at a networking dinner.
Yeah. At Tinker.
Before there was two more. There was two networking dinners. There was one where you came to the club and you were speaking Andy Lee and Erica from Frank Body.
Yeah.
And she was doing the coffee scrubs.
You were doing your cafes?
Yep.
I have a very good memory.
Yeah, you do. I forgot about that. Yeah,
so you were talking, sort of telling your story, and it's been like unreal to see, because I sort of saw you right at the start when you had your first cafe to then when you probably had 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later when you had, you know, 10 or 20 to now where you've got Inglewood and Only Hospitality Group. It's been unbelievable to see your growth throughout that time, which we'll talk a lot about today.
Thanks, Dill. Yeah, no, it's been good. It's obviously life's been a bit of a blur, particularly the last couple of years what's happened, and I feel like every day's sort of been, you know, mashed up into one. But you don't get often a time to reflect and think about your relationships and how you met people. And but yeah, that's sort of it's a bit of a throwback to think about that that session at Carlton. I do remember that night. I actually forgot about it until you mentioned it. I was like, what? And then I'm like, oh yeah, shit, that did happen. But yeah, sort of, I mean, as I said, we've got a lot of mutual friends and we've always managed to sort of stay in touch, infrequently, but when we catch up, it feels like we haven't missed a beat. So it's good to catch up, mate. So looking forward to talking more about it.
Me too. We'll get back to that later, but let's go back to your story. How'd you start? How'd you get into this game? How'd you start building your business?
Yeah, so started the first Cafe Noin Brother, which you mentioned before, in 2012. But before then, had some coffee carts at footy grounds and little athletics complexes and all that, and sort of learned how to make coffee in Canberra and a little bit my dad's restaurant, but sort of really found my love for it in Canberra. Was a PT in a past life, sort of around my coffee carts. And then, you know, as a young bloke, footy was my life back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you sort of get blinded by anything else. You think, oh yeah, footy, that's it. That's all I want to do. And then, so you have a crack, you know, focus on being really fit and all that. And then, you know, I suppose just something needed to happen where I became realistic about where I was at, which was about, you know, 21 years old. And then, when I had a year out of footy from an injury, I asked the GM at my footy club if I could make some coffee there. And it sort of just grew from there. It was very simple. And so it's funny what happens when you sort of find something that a new baby or a new passion, it takes you away from whatever else you were focused on. And then you realize that there's more to life than what you're, not saying that the grass is always greener, but it's important sometimes to have that moment and go with the flow. And that's sort of how it all happened. Fast forward. We've got 350 staff. We've opened about 30 venues, and currently we've sold about 10 or so, but got about 18 venues now. So it's a lot of fun. I love what I do. It's very much a lifestyle, not just a job now. And having a lot of fun. It's been good.
It's incredible. Now, there's two parts to that. There's the funny part where I read a lot of interviews. I've done all my research. I'm one of the best in the game at just in-depth research. And there's an article coming out. There's probably 3 articles coming out saying, poor young man, does his knee, AFL dream gone. Can we put this to bed once and for all? You're not Chris Judd, okay? You weren't going to win a Brownlow. You didn't have this heartbroken thing for a dream that's gone out, has it? We've got to bury this,
mate,
now.
I was hoping that, I know this is a bit of footy talk on this. I was a bit apprehensive. Yeah. I certainly was not going to win a Brownlow. I've been wanting to put this to bed for a long time. And I feel like my footy career, I'll say that very, very loosely, is a bit like my Enter score.
Yeah.
Both failed miserably, and they both have little effect on what I do today. So it's a bit funny, and I get so many messages from. The good thing about that angle is that it gives my old teammates a reason to message me, and so it actually does cause us to sort of catch up and talk shit together. But mate, look, I hate it. I hate that it gets brought up. I did a campaign with Amex and Qantas a few months ago, just through Inglewood, because we buy a lot of our green coffee via Amex from overseas. And the Sydney media company that were doing the article wanted to get this. They wanted to start the heading to be AFL star. And I said, hang on a second. I said, mate, if you run with that title, I'm not doing the campaign. I was pissed off. I was but in Sydney and New South Wales, if you play Aussie rules, you're an AFL player, doesn't matter what level. So I understood, like, you know what I mean? Mate, I wasn't an AFL player. I wasn't a star. If you go near that, I'm done. Like, he pulled it back, still went with a VFL star. Like, I've had a gut full of this, but I can tell you right now, yeah, it's not how it's written. I loved football. I played with it. I enjoyed it, but yeah, not the case. Still.
I thought I'd like to put that to the bed for you because
we have Boehner in the house now too.
Yeah, Boehner's coming to the show. He's coming to the show.
Boehner of my existence.
I thought we'd put that to bed because I know it was something that was that you like to tell people after a few beers, but I thought it was time the truth came out that wasn't the case. Talk us through that time though, like starting those coffee carts at games. Like you're going to you're sort of in a like career transition. You said you're a PT, you're playing footy. Then you got to start in these coffee carts. Like you're going to other games on the weekend, you're going to little ass tracks, all these things where I can imagine like at the moment I'm a really big fan of there's this thing at the moment called the Great Resignation where we see so many like, you know, younger people going, no, fuck this, I'm going to start a new career and do something that's a bit different. And a lot of people question, they go like, that's so strange. Like, why the fuck is, you know, Moosey's already doing this. He's doing his PT. He's got these things. Was there teammates who were just like, what are you doing, mate? Like, what is going on with starting this like coffee thing? Is it going to even work?
Yeah, there was a bit of that. Like, you know, I was in my, you know, if I rewind back, I'd wear my Boxall trackie and I'd help the guys out in the machine. Like, I remember, I think there's once Nathan Buckley came back and played a VFL game back from injury, and the crowd was massive and we were the only ones selling coffee. So the guys I'd work and they were getting pumped. I was in my Boxall uniform and I jumped on to help make coffee and I was getting some funny stares. So, you know, three people are like, what the fuck are you doing, Moose? Like, well, sorry, excuse the French. If I'm
no, we swear,
Sorry, okay. Yeah. So, what are you doing, Moose? Like, no, I have a long memory. And I remember those, I do remember the doubters a little bit. So there was the element of that. But, you know, Bolt even, I reckon Brennan Bolton, I think he coached you. So he was our coach at the time. And I knew that he didn't really rate it because it looked unprofessional probably to him. But you also got to, when your priorities change, you know, you've got to jump in and help. So there was that element of it. I do remember that, but you know, I don't hold any grudges or anything. It's just sort of people didn't understand. And the Great Resignation, what context did you bring that up? Sorry.
Well, just in terms of like you're on a career path, you're doing things, and even if you're in a good sort of field of work that might look that you're enjoying it to outside people, there's other times where you go, well, fuck, I want to follow my passion and do what I want to do. And you were saying before, like, not stealing your own story here, or if it hopefully it's right, but you started doing this and then it became a career. Like it was a passion first that came a career versus going, I'm going to get this coffee truck with the idea to have 40 restaurants.
I didn't start like, So the Great Resignation, I mean, there is a lot of that. I think a lot of that's because the time, as I said to you off air, I think before to someone, that it's hard to sort of, have balance at the moment. Like I feel like we've just worked every day the last 2 years. And so because now you don't have to work because there's like borders opening up and all that, people are like, oh, let's have a change. Let's make a change. So, I mean, change is good. I mean, it scares people, but there's nothing wrong with change as long as the motivations are right. Like sometimes I think it's escapism. People, you know, will skip town and stuff because they're not happy in their current bubble, but that's not going to solve the issue if you just leave town. Like you're sort of just going and then the issues are still there. So yes, you're right. Like sometimes there's good reasons to change and start something new, but the motivations need to be pure and need to be, they need to be right. The motivations need to be right. They just can't be for bad reasons or get rich quick schemes and all that. Like that doesn't happen very often. Good luck to the people where it happens overnight, but it doesn't happen like that very often. You'd probably know know that story as well, how much grind there is to what you do every day.
And that's like the next point. I think it's really evident with you and your story is starting a business is probably one of the most humbling experiences you can ever have. Like you do think you can't have an ego. You've got to literally drop your ego straight away and just go, I'm here. I've got to do whatever I've got to do to get it done. Talk us through those first like few years of what you were doing when you started your cafes. You were, you know, making the coffees, you were eating the meals, you were ordering, you were doing all these sort of things where at this stage, you know, you've grown and you know, you have people to do that now, but it's, you have to really put in the work.
You do. That's like, there were so many days where I cried and was just like scared. A lot of times when you're young and sort of have no fear, you jump into things without really understanding the financial sort of the overheads and the risks. And, you know, there's so many decisions I made that have really helped us get to where we are today. But if I was to make those decisions now, I probably wouldn't have done it.
High risk decisions, you mean?
Yeah, like when you're young, when you're a kid, you jump into the ocean and you don't give a shit about the waves, you know, whereas now you start going, oh, are there sharks? Am I going to get in a rip and all this? But when you're young, just do it. And that's very similar to how it was with work. I took on some debt that I that I wouldn't probably have, and just the things that support that debt back then, I probably wouldn't have done it now. Now it was so risky, but it's helped us so much. So there's that element of it. So I used to, there was cry, there was tears all the time. I used to do everything back in the day when I couldn't afford to have staff. I, you know, you gave me a bit of shit about the toilets before.
It's a metaphor.
I was out for dinner the other night with a couple of mates, and they're like, "Oh, Moose, you're gonna go clean the toilets for us," something like that, right?
Well, it just,
by the way, Jill, you should clean the toilets, and that'd be kind of better.
Yeah, that was Sam. Put into context as well. We're discussing that when you know you started your business, you were doing everything. You were making the coffees, as we said, but you were cleaning the toilets because that's what you just had to do.
I couldn't afford to have people clean. So even now, I go to the cafes and I check the most like weird things. Mm. I lift the toilet up. I see if everything's clean. I do it because I feel like if you get that stuff right, everything in the venue will be right. And I know it's strange. I have these little weird OCD. I'm not OCD, but I have these weird little, yeah, I don't know if it's
intricacies.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I just think it's, yeah, nothing was above or below me. I just did everything. And now it's about hiring good staff and getting out of their way. So I try not to micromanage. I know before we jump on the machine, I sort of jumped in and I was really happy not to jump in.
It was very power crazy.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I had to do it though.
I was intimidated.
I really try not to do that. I'm really aware of being a micromanager and, I like to delegate. I don't, you know, there's you can delegate or abdicate. That's the word, abdicate. Yeah, but I don't. And I don't, relinquish responsibility. Yeah. I just try to give others more responsibility. So that's important. And but back to the start. So yeah, it was really scary. It was hard. A lot of hard work for nothing at the start, mate. Like I was barely making a dollar the first year. Literally working for below an hourly rate if I was an employee kind of thing. So it certainly didn't happen overnight. You know, not saying that I'm not Elon Musk, but I'm just saying like. Yeah, things are good now. Yep. Stressful, but it was very, very tough early days.
I think one of my, and again, I'm a very amateur in this business where I've been for 1 or 2 years, but one thing I've loved and seeing someone like yourself, which I touched on before, is a 10-year overnight success. It's one of my favorite sayings because you look at yourself and you might see someone now going, fuck, Moosey's done this, he's done that. But as I said, I saw you have that one cafe, saw you have four, saw you have, 10, and now you're at where you are now. So much work has to go in behind the scenes, and so many people don't know what's actually happening. And it's really hard, even I've found, not that you start a business for recognition. You start it because you're intrinsically motivated to do well.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it for anything other than intrinsic motivation, it just doesn't happen.
No, I totally agree. It's something that's like called the iceberg effect. You see the top of the iceberg, but you don't know what's underneath, underwater, and what happens to get that, the iceberg, I suppose. But it wasn't overnight. It really wasn't. There definitely was there are points where like things accelerated, but there were also valleys where it was so scary and risky, you're right. You need to be motivated and you need to be passionate. I'm really passionate about what I do, passionate about coffee, passionate about people, love creating fun experiences for people and make them come into a space and feel something and a bit of a buzz, like whether it be in the cafes, the pub, the roastery. I'm passionate about everything we do, so it's important.
Biggest steps for you had, so obviously Annoying Brother was your first, you've got other countless cafes now, but what was sort of the model from there? How did you scale up? How did you go, fuck, we're gonna open another one, we're gonna go again?
I suppose what I identified early was that if I wanted my staff to be able to stay with me long term, a couple of things. When we start, I really found it, try to find staff that were really hungry and had similar sort of motivations and values as me. So lifestyle driven, really love to work hard, really like to have fun. We say work hard, play hard internally. But to be able to do that, you need to be able to pay people accordingly. But to be able to pay people accordingly, you need to grow the business so there's more revenue, more profit, and then everyone gets some pieces of the pie. So that's what we did. We found really good people. One of our mutual mates, Tony Pantano, like people like that, and you get them involved and you get them part of the whole picture. And then you try to grow the business, you build the revenue, build the profit, you find new opportunities. try to vertically integrate the business, and then you go from there. So that's been something that we're really proud of. We've got so many staff, you know, for hospitality, which is a really transient industry apparently. Well, it is. Of course, you have some of your top, some of your sort of, you know, your front of house staff that would be transient, like maybe 1 to 2 year, work span for you. But our key executive team have been with us for years, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So, that's how we sort of scaled it from the,
With, like you were saying before, you started at 21 years of age. And I said this off the camera before, this is a podcast, but it's basically like me just asking you fucking questions because I have no idea what I'm doing. But how do you know, like, when to scale? And one thing that I'm interested to see if this was the same for you is in my business now, like when we first made steps to go like, all right, we've got to get a bigger place. We've got to put on more staff. I got this studio, and when I first walked in here, it was really only me that was working, and I had, you know, some contractors and stuff. And I was like, this is embarrassing. Like I'm the only person in this fucking massive building. How is it going to work? You fast forward like 3 months later, and
it's full.
It's full.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I'm interested in a business. It's like you nearly need to take the leap, then grow into it.
Yep.
Because I don't think if I had have done that, I wouldn't have then got more people here.
Yep, definitely. So it's like the word vision, I suppose. Yeah. Like, you know, you're people, like, and you don't need everyone to know, like, you don't need everyone to see that vision that you see. But I feel like you've got to have, I suppose, resilience and know the big picture, and also try to sort of, obviously you listen to people, but you try not to let the negative, because you can tell some people who are constantly negative when you ask for advice, and the ones that are really positive. So you need to try to find that happy medium. But no doubt, like as you said, when you took on this big office and you're like, wow, this is a big office, now I've got to fill with people. But I feel like if you have that plan and that growth plan, then you take the punt. But you obviously need a plan. You need to know that there's a business in place that that will allow you to grow. And in terms of when you know when to do that, again, like if you see your trends, if you're doing if you've got your data all in order and you're getting people report and you're seeing your growth and you're graphing it, well, then you can make those decisions forward thinking. And we just, opportunity is everything. And, you know, they say never waste a good crisis. The pandemic was a crisis. A lot of businesses went through some hardship. You don't like to prey on the vulnerable, but obviously there was a lot of businesses out there that were looking to transact and get out. And thankfully we had some parts of the business that went really well during the pandemic. We had some parts that were really hurt, but thankfully the ones that went really well sort of took out they took care of the ones that weren't going well, and that gave us a chance to push ahead. And we've been really aggressive during COVID, and it's given a lot of people opportunity. So I think there's 5 core partners in the business, but we've got, I think, 16 ex-staff who are still staff but have equity in venues and
awesome.
And all that, which is great. And that sort of, helps, many, many hands make light work. So that's really helped us keep going.
And I feel like, you're being humble there, but I think a big part of that from reading business management back in year 11 is you're like sort of empowering people that come into the business to then own their own business too, which I can imagine is very motivating for them to do well.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like owning your own business, that empowerment is really important. And you try to make sure that people, the staff that you try to get involved become equity partners. You try to say, look, if you come on board, you've got this model that's been going now for 8 years. There's some, you can have faith in this. And so you try to make sure their lifestyle, you work to live, not live to work. And I think when you try to tell that story to your staff, and we're really trying, like, of course, there's days when you like feel like all you do is work. And the staff would feel that, but the ones that you sort of bring into the business, you want to make sure that they're the same values as I said to you, and they get that ownership, and they get to learn a lot. They get to see the whole back end of the business, where normal staff wouldn't, because probably not for their interest, but. All the new people we've brought involved in business have learned a lot, and learning is important. I feel like if you're not if you're not growing, you're dead kind of thing, and if you're not going to work every day to get better and get something out of it, then what's the sort of point? So, and as Jill, like obviously, everyone's got a lifestyle goal, and everyone's got a lifestyle goal or a lifestyle they want to live. And money is an important ingredient of that. And if you're going to go to work and work your ass off, you need to be paid accordingly. And that means you can live your good life, you know, have a great lifestyle, I think. And you don't need money to have a good lifestyle. People have got different, you know, different ideas of that. But my point is, a lot of the people who are in business, you want to have that reward because it's so stressful. And we're very process driven. We don't like do things for the, you know, money is a byproduct is one of the many byproducts of a good business or a bad business, losing money or making money. I try to make sure that as a business, we always are motivated by looking at things above the line, not just focused on the bottom line, because then I just feel like you're not, you know, it's process v outcome. And I just try to make sure as a group, all the staff, we just look at the cost of goods every week, the labor benchmark every week, all of our deals. You look at every single metric before you start worrying about the result, because if you start getting the results, it's a bit, I don't like that. So anyway, but that's probably going down another rabbit hole there. But so just try to be results, try to be really process driven rather than result driven. I think it's really important in anything in your life, I reckon.
For sure. I'm going through that at the moment. I feel like I've always been process driven, but when, you know, stress builds and your business builds, you start going, oh fuck, like let's think about this.
Yep.
And as soon as you do start thinking about, you know, the profits or whatever it is, it's like, money is fluid. It comes and goes.
Yep.
And the more you think about it, I feel like the less it comes. I just go like, I'm not going to fucking even stress about that. That's just let it do its thing and it'll work out.
Probably a bit like you, Matt. Like, you're looking fantastic. You walked in and you're looking you're like a fine wine, mate. You're looking better with age. Mate, you've been training for a
marathon.
For a marathon.
Oh, don't worry. They know.
That's a different thing. But obviously you're just, you know, ticking the boxes. You're not focused on the marathon or focused on sort of tick, you know.
Well, I have severe anxiety about the marathon as well.
Could think of anything worse,
there is. No, it's process. It's the week ahead.
That's it.
I've just got to get through my mate's Bucks party this weekend. And then
really? Who's is that?
Oh, no.
I agree though. Like looking at I don't like that, the idea of just looking at the money part of it. And I think that sort of makes you not enjoy it as well. Like, it really does make you not enjoy it. Like, I feel like you should go and have fun and make sure everyone's having fun, enjoying each other's company. I love who I work with.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
I enjoy hanging out with them. They're like my mate, you know, like so many of my great friends are at work, you know?
Yeah.
So there's many parts to it.
There is. No, definitely. We you know, we're saying this morning, fuck, how lucky we just come in here, chill out and talk shit.
It's awesome.
The one part I really want to talk about your business is the most exciting part. And I feel like I know why it's so successful, but your model of business, like, you know, you've got cafes, none of the same cafes. They're all different. They've all got their own niche.
Yep.
But obviously in Melbourne, especially, it's probably widely renowned as the mecca of coffee and breakfast in the world.
Yeah.
And you at the center of that. Why do you think it's so successful?
You know, playing good music, you know, great staff, people who want to be there is really important. Being really aware of how people are feeling.
Mm.
You know, great food, great coffee, of course. But the intangibles, all the little bits and pieces, you know, we talked about toilets before, you know, just making sure everything is considered is, I think we're good at considering everything.
I've heard you sort of speak about, and I don't know if we spoke about this in the past, but the reason as well, just with your venues and what you've been able to create goes so well in Melbourne is, and we had Nick Stone on the podcast early in the year.
Yeah.
Who is just an incredible guy. And, you know, his model that he's been able to do with Bluestone Lane in the US is unbelievable. Awesome, he's got, you know, his chains going up against Starbucks. And I think you've both mentioned, like, in Australia, that just doesn't work here because of, you know, we want to feel like we're in a bit more of a cafe that's just a one-out type situation.
Yeah, independent.
Yeah.
The independent sort of... I feel like Australians are a bit more sophisticated.
Yeah.
Like... I don't know. I feel like we just like to support independent brands.
Mm.
And that's why that we have different names for all our venues, except for the Juliet's.
Yep.
But the Juliet's store's a bit different. And they have like 100% the same everything, like in terms of-
So the Juliet's are a bakery and coffee shop.
So it's a espresso bar and bakery and you know, baked goods. So Nick Stone's done a great job over there and, you know, tough market as well and scary as well. Like he's taken out, you know, you try to keep things as predictable as possible in business and he's gone to the States, probably wouldn't have known anyone when he first started and he's got however many stores, 50 or 60 stores now, more, probably more now, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so we've had some, I played a game of footy once against Nick years and years ago. When I played a game for St. Kevin's Old Boys, he was playing for Collegians.
Okay,
so he wouldn't remember probably, but it was a long time ago, but that was the first time I knew of him. And then obviously Tony Pantano was a GM for theirs in the West Village store years ago. And so I've kept, you know, Nick and I've kept in touch a little bit over email through Tony, and we've had some staff from here go to Nick's, to Bluestone. We've had some Bluestone staff come to us. So there's been this unofficial sort of exchange happening over the last few years, and but he's done an amazing job, and yeah, but keeping independent it has been a really important part, and opening the suburbs. You know, we like to focus on old milk bars, you know, where, you know, milk bars aren't really surviving anymore, but they're all in convenient locations. They're like convenience stores, so that's sort of where the angle we're going. And they look independent, they feel independent, they are independent, of course, but having unique names has been an important recipe with that.
It's like, and again, this is probably a private question, I'm not sure on your business model, but do you do, like, when you try and find these venues, are you trying to purchase the properties as well?
Yeah, where we can. So they're obviously,
it's like the McDonald's model.
Yeah, the founder, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a bit of that. So there's that scene in the founder where he goes, you know, you're not in the food business, you're in the real estate business. Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, we've bought, you know, maybe of the 30 odd stores we've opened, we've probably bought 5 or 6 of them. And yeah, so we buy the freehold vacant possession, and then do the fit out, lease it back to ourselves on a long term lease. Jack the rent a little bit, and then we try to sell the freehold on a jacked rent on a really sharp yield, and then we keep the business. And the idea is sort of to try to get the business for nothing, I suppose, is the idea. That's worked really well for us. Mm-hmm. They're the milk bar scenarios we look at, because milk bars are typically dilapidated. They're all really old buildings, and we always talk about highest and best use internally. So we try to find that, rundown shitbox, and then a diamond in the rough, I suppose. So yeah, we definitely try. We try to buy as much as we can, the freehold, but it's also capital intensive. So we always weigh up, do we buy the freehold or do we try to open 4 stores that and lease them, which can helps cash flow and all that. So it's just always a balancing act.
Unbelievable. You've got the 2 businesses. So you've got Only Hospitality Group, which is all your, bars, cafes, and then you've got Inglewood Roasters.
Yep.
Why are they separate? Which came first and how do they service each other?
So yeah, Only Hospitality Group is just basically just a branding exercise to yep. Give our staff, more importantly, a sense of belonging. They're part of the Only Hospitality Group umbrella. But that doesn't actually trade or anything. So all the venues are separate entities. And we've also got Electric Sunday, which is our in-house design agency.
Nice.
So, which does all photography, videography, social media, PR. So we take care of that all internally, because I'm sick of this whole VFL star angle. So we're handling our own PR now, because I'm sick of that crap, the misleading angle. So, so Electric Sunday, Inglewood, and Only Hospitality Group. Inglewood came about 6 stores in. We started roasting for our venues only and then went out to wholesale.
Yep.
The reason we have a separate name is because we're obviously supplying what a lot of people would consider our competitors. So we supply about 120 cafes in Melbourne and Melbourne, Sydney, Queensland, New South Wales, Queensland. So it's just an important way to sort of separate from our cafe group, because we want our wholesale customers to feel like we're competing.
Yep.
So obviously vertical integration is the idea. We use so much photography and videography and PR and all that it makes sense to do it in-house. So rather than go external, hire the staff within, make sure you load them up with enough work, and then we've tried to do some external work as well for our wholesale customers. So it's obviously brought down our cost base for coffee, for example. We buy the coffee green from overseas, roasted in house. And as you said before, similar to you, we went from a 400 square meter site to a 3,000 square meter site 3 months ago. And it was the same deal. You walk in this big giant shed and you go, well, we got to fill this place down. We got to, up the ante on with rev and profit to make sure, the rent went from 30 grand to 200,000 a year. But it's funny, when you make those decisions and you believe in your process and your plan, it happens quicker than you think. So that's been really good. Our new headquarters is great. And Inglewood's been fantastic. To be honest, at the start, I didn't really want to do roast coffee. And thankfully for Corey Slater, my partner at Inglewood and his partner in the venues as well, he was a barista. talk about this empowerment, like, you know, started on, you know, minimum wage as a barista, and he's now flying and he's going really well, and he just believes in us, and he's going so well, and
so
I'm so happy for him.
He worked for you, now he's the bringing in the beans.
He's the head green bean buy. Wow. He's basically like CEO of England.
Where do you buy them from?
All over the world, Central America, wow. Africa. Yeah, so a lot of Brazilian coffees, Colombians, Rwandans, everything. Ethiopian coffees are my favorite.
Yeah.
All over the world, honestly. We buy some direct, but we use a lot of brokers. Brokers obviously have the best relationships on the ground over there, but green bean brokers, they're called. Yeah, so it's not as difficult as you think. It honestly isn't. Like, it sounds like, like, how do you buy copper overseas? But it's not as hard as you think. If you get on Google, you'll probably be able to buy them yourself.
Oh, so. Wholesale beans, all right. Yeah. Dylan Friends Coffee, it's coming soon. mate, your best part of business now, you know, you've been doing this for 10, 15 years. How long have you been?
Been in business since 2000. Yeah. Oh, it's the venue since 2012.
Yep.
But had the coffee carts for a couple of years before that. But yeah.
That's about 10 years. It's 9 years.
That's 9 years. Yeah, that is shit.
Okay, you got 10 year next year.
Sorry, yep, it is.
It's exciting. What would you say, like, do's and don'ts, biggest fuck ups, biggest learnings? Is there anything out there that's just common that you think that you'd pass on to someone looking to start a business now? Maybe give us like early days and then something to that might be later on in a business.
The
as well.
Do's? When you, I think it's a young, like starting a new business is a young person's game, I think. Well, not, it shouldn't be generalized, but I feel like when you're younger and you've got less you know, liabilities or
you
responsibilities.
You don't have a mortgage, you've got these, so you can fuck up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly right. You can fail fast and with minimal damage.
So I look at my footy career as sort of just like, you know, I didn't really have that much laying me back.
You're selling yourself short.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about that.
I think that failing fast is important. So I think, you know, just have a crack early and don't think, there's so many people out there who I know that are starting to open cafes, they just take too long.
Yes.
It's like, you know, if you start,
I know what you're saying. If you're not embarrassed, you started too late.
Embarrassed on day one, yeah, you started like too late. Yeah. You launched too late. We open our venues so like under the pump and like so much work to do, yeah. But you're better off just get it open and then sort out,
work it
back
out.
Your people in, yeah. Just to be problem solvers on the fly.
Yeah.
Just stop procrastinating.
That's a big one.
Procrastination's a big one. So like 99% of people are procrastinators. Be part of the 1%. And just do it.
Just on that as well. Not that, you know, I'm comparing my podcast to your business, but when I started the show, it was the biggest thing. I'd procrastinated for probably a year. Then I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to start. And I was in the same position as what I was a year before. Like nothing had changed. And now people always, you know, ask for advice, which I absolutely love when people want to start podcasts, because people say it's flooded. It's not flooded at all. It's like cafes. They're not flooded. If you make a good one, it'll go well.
I totally
like
agree.
Like you just keep going. It's flooded for a reason, because they're a good product.
Yep, I like
anyway,
that.
Anyway, people, so, you know, they go, oh, I've got this really good idea. Just waiting on a few things. Like I've got to do this research. Got to have a few practices. I'm like, man, just fucking start it. Like
just
honestly, you can do it on your laptop. You can record anything, because you're going to hate whatever business it is, you're going to hate your first six months of it. You're going to look back and go, that was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like every day I look back at my catalog and I go, let me delete those first 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Like they are fucked. You know?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Like I think people spend too much time on their business plan.
Mm. It's like, I didn't have one of those.
Neither did I. Yeah. But that's the thing. That's exactly my point. Neither did I. Like,
you make it up later, really, don't
you? Yeah, just make up on the fly and listen to the right, like listen to advice. When people are giving you advice and they've been there and done it, yeah. Like they've actually done what you want to do, mm-hmm. Listen. And don't think you know better. Like some people know, the amount of time I help, like I've had people reach out in cafes and they go, what do you, like, how do you keep your numbers, your cost of goods like, or like, how do you report your numbers? I'll show them how you report. Literally bring them, I've brought some people into our office and show them our back end, just out of the, you know, good of my heart to help. And I get back in touch 3 months later, they have not actioned anything. And it's like, why did you reach out? Like, why did you reach out for help and get the help you needed, but didn't listen? Like time waste. That's a time waster. And so don't be one of those people, I would say. Like, that's, to be honest, that's 99% of people. They just don't want to listen and don't want to action anything. So just action the advice you get if it's, you know, it's good. Stop being lazy. Stop, procrastinating. So that's a massive don't and do, I suppose.
Have you got any other plans for any other, like, scaling, any more verticals through your businesses? Do you want to move into something else? Or do you feel like there's a gap in the market at the moment that you're...
Yeah, we've got a few things coming up. We've Saw you drinking some soy milk before. We've got a hazelnut milk coming to the market very soon, which would be
hazelnut milk.
Yeah, hazelnut milk.
Is that new? Because is it true hazel. Almonds are like really hard to get now? Almond milk? Is that?
Almond milk? Our almond milk. No, we've got some stock. I don't think we have any issues with almond milk. Or actual almonds?
Almonds?
I don't know. I haven't heard that. I'll ask the roastery.
Well, I think maybe
we distribute alternative milk. So yeah, I think we distribute alternative milks, a lot of it.
Yeah.
And you know, your soy milk, you know, almond. All that stuff. So hazelnut. We got a hazelnut brand, hazelnut milk.
I haven't had a hazelnut
called
milk.
Hazel. It's called Hazel. Look out for that. So that's one thing that we've got coming up.
Sort of makes sense, doesn't
it? We're investing in the order at the table space. So that tech, we've got a tech coming out.
An app guy now.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm not to say too much about it, but it is coming. So we're doing a JV with someone on that, which is really exciting. But yeah, so couple of things, just head down, just trying to acquire some sites, trying to, I think, open 4 or 5 before Christmas. So we've got a bit of work on our plate at the minute, but it's exciting.
And it probably leads into the next question, might even be the same one, but what's next? Is there anything for you, even work, personal life? I know we're going to go play some golf together soon.
Yes, we are. We'll have a hit deal for sure.
Confirming that on the...
Yeah, let's do it. No, lock it in. You're going on Monday anyway, but yeah, no, we'll definitely book it in.
And we're getting the helicopter.
Did you say that?
You remember at Cathedral, and you were telling me that you're going to take me on the helicopter there.
Oh, Jesus. Oh,
weren't
yeah,
you?
I'll take, yeah, I'll, yeah. yeah, we'll go.
On
yeah,
the helicopter.
Yeah, 100% we'll do it.
On the helicopter.
Yeah, let's do it.
Done. Fantastic. It's on record.
Yeah, the time record now. Yeah, definitely, let's do it. I'd like to play more golf. I haven't played much golf at all.
What are you playing off at the moment?
Oh, I'm slipping. Really? I was off 7.8 at one point, and now I'm off 7.9. Now I'm off 13, hitting them like I'm off 30. I suck.
Yeah.
Okay. So I need to get some lessons.
Well, I do hit them off 30 at the moment.
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah.
Win some comps. That's good. Oh, I'm just no good. You need to practice. It's too hard of a sport to roll up to the first tee. And I just, you know what I mean? Like you wipe the first 4 holes. But what's next as well? So just, yeah, as I said, got some venues opening up before Christmas. So we just focus on that really. And looking at more pubs, really like the pub. The hotel column has gone really well. And so yeah, other than that though, mate, just head down, bum up, just keep focused and keep trying to, you know, get more people, more great people involved in the business. And I'm a team sport person. I like the idea of team, having good people around me. So just keep having fun with and being really choosy about who's on the journey with us. So yeah.
Awesome, mate. You're doing an incredible job.
Thanks,
it's been
Bill.
Honestly,
so are you, mate.
Yeah, real blessing to know you from back in the day to now. It's been unreal. And in all honesty, it has been a very big inspiration to me for what I'm doing. It's, you know, just to see someone that just like puts their head down, fucking churns it out and hustles. So,
likewise to you, mate. It's good to see you fly, mate. Everyone talks about how well you're going with the podcast and the business. So, you know, congratulations to you, mate. You've been awesome, and it's very good to come here and see what you're doing.
Compliments. I was giving one to you, and I wasn't finished, so I was still going with it. Congratulations to you, and look forward to getting to one of the venues soon. They're all over Melbourne. You can't, you know, mistake, and we'll have them all in the show notes. We'll have them in the intros, but looking forward to having a beer.
Looking forward
very
to
soon.
No worries. Thank you for having me, and you know, if any clothing brands are looking for someone to model, I reckon I should get in touch with Dylan.
Oh, I don't.
He's looking fantastic. He's got the beautiful blue eyes. You're looking trim. You're looking great, mate. You really are like a fine one, sort of peaking a little. You've de-aged, so I'm looking for. I need some tips off the air about that.
Do you know what's a big thing I've learned lately? Is I've had long hair my whole life, and I said this in a few weeks ago. I was always really worried about my hair, and I was like, "Fuck, I'm losing my hair. Like, I'm going to grow it longer." And you know, you grow it long. It's the worst thing you can
That's
do.
That's the worst thing you
it's
can do.
It's the stupidest thing you can do. Yeah. Just cut it short. Cut it short and cut it shorter. Bane is here. And I was like, fuck, I'm just going to, you know, shave my head, which was for, you know, my mate who had some treatment.
Yep.
And now I'm just hot.
You're looking good. Right.
So I'm just going to just keep going.
You're looking really good. No, good stuff, mate. Thanks
so much.
And had a lot of fun. So thank you.
If that wasn't enough for you and you want even more, you're in luck. Dylan Friends is now on Patreon. Dylan Best Friends. If you'd like to learn more, you can head to patreon.com/Dylan Friends, or you can head to the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Dylan Friends podcast. If you liked the show, it'd be a massive help if you could like, follow, rate, leave a review, or even share with your friends. The show is produced by myself and Sam Bonza. Damon Jackman from Creative Edge Films is responsible for audio and visual production. The show is recorded at the Dylan Friends studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you'd like to get in touch or suggest a guest or advertise with the Dylan Friends podcast, please email us at inquiries@dylanfriends.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.